Doing? Thanks for tuning into the Damn Real Estate Show. My name's Quinn. I am your damn host, and this is going to be a great show. We got a lot of good things to talk about this week. A couple things that are, you know, I'm very passionate about, that are close to my heart, but I also have to start off by warning you. A couple things. It is now 11:22 p.m. Eastern Time. I should be sleeping. So there's a good possibility I may completely just fade out, and you may hear some snoring on my end. I apologize in advance if that happens, but we're going to roll the dice, and I'm going to record a late show. The other thing was I was at the air show this weekend. We went to the MacDill Air Show. It's one of the biggest air shows in the South. I've been a big aviation fan for pretty much all my life. As far as I can remember, I've always wanted to be around aircraft and flying. So for me, the air show, the Blue Angels, I mean, that's as good as it gets. That's as good as Super Bowl Sunday for me. So we went to the air show. I really had a great time. They put on a hell of a display. Blue Angels were phenomenal, as they always are. If you've seen them perform live, it's something you got to do. Well, while we were there, I was dressed appropriately. It was fairly cool in the morning, about 65 or so. And then the, you know, fog and the mist kind of burned off, and it got to be about a 75 or so degree day, which was cool. It was breezy. It was a very nice day for the air show. It was like perfect timing. Everything's working out exactly the way you'd want it to. So we're checking out all the aircraft and doing our thing. And we were there from about 10 o'clock in the morning till about 4 o'clock or so, right about there, Eastern time in the evening. So we leave the show, and by the time I get into the car, it's when I'm in the shade, air conditioning's blowing on my face, and I'm hurting already. And I'm like, oh crap, I really burned my face. And for those of you that don't know, the UV in Florida, it's very strong. It's stronger than pretty much everywhere else in North America. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a microwave down here. And it was one of those deals where I was outside all day. I was looking up into the sky. Obviously, that's where the planes are. And I got into the car and I got home. And I'm literally like dumping buckets of aloe on my face. And now we're into day three. This happened on Saturday. And my face is already starting to peel like mad. So it's kind of difficult to talk, actually. I feel like you know, hopefully the first layer of skin, the ugliness, burns off, and maybe I'll be a better looking guy after all the dust clears. But right now it's just it's maddening. And I think you know, when I'm walking around in public, because I had to go out this morning, as a matter of fact, for a meeting, and I think people are really kind of lobbying to put me in next to Elephant Man as a display at a local carnival. I mean, it's pretty crazy. So I just wanted to share that with you, but the air shows is really fun, and if you get a chance to go to a big show like that where they have a lot of the high-performance military aircraft, it is awesome. But enough about that. I just want to give you guys a little bit about what I did this weekend, kind of catch you up. And also, we need to move on and talk about how to get in touch with the show, because this show is all about you, my friends. And I got to say, I've been very happy with the subscriptions that we've been getting. I think we're going to take this thing to the next level. It's only a matter of time. We're really getting a lot of subscriptions right now. It's really on the cusp of blowing up. And I promise you this, you stick with us, we'll make this an unbelievable show. We will make this the best real estate show out there. I can tell you right now on Podbean, where we actually host the show, we're number 4. We've cracked the top 100 in a matter of weeks. We're the number 4 show already. And quite frankly, I don't even think we've put out a good show. So it's going to get better. Now, if you want to subscribe to the show, because I could at any time move the place where we're hosting the show. So you want to make sure you're subscribing to the right feed. And you want to go to the VALoanStore.com website, because that's where all the magic happens. That's where the feed originates. So go to VALoanStore.com. You can click on any one of the links right there and you can get the show feed. And when you subscribe, if you're an iTunes user, you can get the feed and download it into iTunes. So you can listen to the show at your leisure. You can carry this around in pretty much any MP3 player out there. And it is 100% free to you. We've also got Twitter, and that's just Twitter/VALoanStore.com. That's where we're going to have all the updates. That's pretty much where we'll post what's going on as far as, you know, topics, guests, that sort of thing. So jump on that bandwagon as well. If you want to give us a phone call, now up to this point in time, we have not recorded the show live. It's been pre-recorded. As I said, right now it's 11:28 in the evening. So now I don't think anybody's going to be calling in. But if you do call in, you can leave a message and we'll actually play that back on the next show. So you'll hear the voice recording. If you're asking a question, you'll get to hear yourself on the air. You'll be cool. Your friends will high-five you. So we'll play back your questions and I'll give out the answers if you've got something. Or if you want to make a suggestion, whatever it is, the phone number is 310-876-2891. So you've got that. And also, to one last thing, email. Right now, the email is info@VALoanStore.com. But as you know, this show continues to grow, I think I'll probably create a website for the show, and it'll have its own little domain, and it'll be out there floating around by itself. But right now, it's not there. So it is what it is, my friends. So today, we've got two topics that we want to talk about. And one of which is going to be short sales, and we're also going to cover loan modifications. And we're going to cover those two topics because really they're kind of in the same basket. One kind of goes with the other. Short sales, to me, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I read a lot of blogs. I'm just in banking for the most part. So I'm very, very familiar with it, but I want to talk about that today because there's some things that I want to touch upon that I really haven't seen out there. So regardless if you're in the short sale business, you're a realtor, you're a banker, whoever you are, I think this show will have something for you. But more importantly, I want to bring some awareness to the table because, you know, it's really an epidemic that we're in right now. And the sooner we all jump on board and come together, the sooner we're going to be able to tackle this beast known as the short sale. And before we really kind of get into those topics, I should back up just a smidge because we really need to talk about my credentials and what really brings my expertise. Why should I talk about this? You're probably all asking yourselves, you know, well, who's this guy? Why do I want to listen to him? Well, let me just tell you a little bit about me. First and foremost, I have been in mortgage banking. I've worked as a broker and a banker. I've been doing that for probably about 12 years. I've done very high-end commercial development as a realtor. Yes, that's right. I do have a real estate license, but also as a banker, where we were putting together performas, doing cost analysis, economic feasibilities, you name it. We were going through the reports and putting these together. And not only did I engineer and structure transactions on a financial arena, we did this both domestically and internationally. I have done projects in foreign countries as far east or west, I guess, depending on where you are, as Sochi, Russia. We've been in the Caribbean, South America, and all over the US. So I guess what I'm getting at is I'm very familiar with commercial transactions, and I also do have a real estate license. So I own it, and it's kind of like what Jerry Seinfeld says. When you own it, as far as, and he's talking in regards to Jewish jokes, because Jerry Seinfeld is Jewish, and he always said that if you're Jewish, you can tell and make fun of Jews. Well, because I am a banker and mortgage broker, I can make fun of that whole arena, and I can also make fun of realtors because I have a real estate license. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take off the gloves today. We're going to get real. I'm not going to pull any punches, and I'm going to share with you my thoughts on this honestly. I'm going to tell you exactly as I see it, and hopefully you'll appreciate it. Now, there's probably going to be some of you that might get offended, and quite frankly, I really don't care because this show is also about really delivering what's going on out there. The other thing I should share with y'all, and I think this kind of really goes back to my morality and kind of my background, before I really kind of got into and transitioned into real estate 100%, I worked in law enforcement. I actually had a license with FDLE. So my approach to real estate has always been to be, you know, ethical, honest, and beyond reproach. I would never, ever, ever, ever do anything that I believed was not 100% above board. So what I'm going to share with you folks today, when I talk about the things that I'm doing, I'm showing and telling you that I do these things because I believe in them. I believe it's honest and it's good business and it really is helping people. Okay, so now you guys kind of know about me and my credentials. It's not, excuse me, I'm tipping back the tea and the coffee here. So nobody should be drinking coffee at this hour, but I am. So I'm going to share with you these experiences and what we're going into. Now I'm going to take a quick break just to get a breather here. I talked for, 13 or so minutes. When we come back, we're jumping in to short sales. We are going to get to the bottom of that madness. First topic, that'll be up in a minute.
The hip hop, the hip to the hip hip hop. You don't stop the rocket to the bang bang boogie. Say up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. Now what you hear is not a test. I'm rapping to the beat, and me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang bang the boogie to the boogie. Say up jump the boogie to the bang bang boogie. Let's rock. You don't.
So welcome back. We're talking about short sales on the Damn Good Radio Show. And first thing I want to do, because I don't really know my audience right now, which is one of the things and one of the reasons why it's critical that you all write in, post information and questions and just get involved, because we can make this as complex and as deep, or, you know, if I need to break it down Barney style and keep it real simple, really depends on the audience that we have there. So I am going to explain what a short sale is and then kind of move into kind of the philosophies and the theories behind it and where the problems arose, and then we'll move into some solutions and we'll just take it start to finish, just like if we were in a lab working on a scientific experiment. So the first thing is obviously, what is a short sale and the components of a short sale? Now we've got two things that we're going to be looking at. A short sale is simply a home where the mortgage is greater than the present value of the home. So you're upside down, you owe more than it's worth essentially, and we've got a seller that has a legitimate financial hardship. You couple those two things together, you've got a qualified short sale. Now, from a realtor's perspective, you can already see how this would be quite the quagmire, because the typical realtor is a transaction specialist, and you know, now they're dealing with a property where you've now got a distressed seller, property's upside down, it's very difficult to list. You know, who's coming to the table with the cash to make up the difference? It's a tough deal. So early on, way back in the day, way before the invention of the wheel, short sales were at a disadvantage. And most realtors, I'd say 99% of them, pretty much just blacklisted them. They're like, hey, I'm not going to deal with them. They're more trouble than they're worth. And not too far down the road, these desperados came riding into town on their white horse and waving their 10-gallon hats, and we'll call them the investors. And the investors came up with a bunch of solutions to resolve the whole short sell epidemic. Now, some of them were probably below board and illegal and unethical. I know that pretty much all aspects of real estate, be it the realtor, be it the banker, be it the investor, we're all guilty as a group of screwing this thing up and doing things that we shouldn't have been doing, essentially. That's kind of why, to a small degree, why we are where we are. There was a lot of fraud and things going on. I know that F word. I just said it. But what's funny to me, and this is just kind of a side note, I think that because I've worked on both sides of the fence, what's funny to me is I think the bankers were openly shady. They didn't really try to hide that they were doing what they were doing. The bankers and the mortgage brokers and the title offices, I will say, they were pretty open about it too. But with realtors, the whole group really just kind of preaches, you know, being, better than everybody else. And when you're there, it's almost like you're in church. So they weren't as outwardly scammerish as, you know, pretty much everybody else. And I think it's part of maybe how the whole realtor society operates. But for the most part, realtors, if you're ever at a big group of realtors, you're at a training or a convention, it was always funny to me. And I'm just, this is me, in my observations, realtors were very cautious, and to the common public, you know, always preached doing the right thing and this and that. And they were just as guilty as everybody else. So just kind of funny to me as an observation. And remember, I am a realtor. I own this. So basically where I'm going with this is because of the transaction and what it was, short sales were destined to fail. What happened is investors moved in and eventually, I think, came up with a very good solution to solving the epidemic. But because realtors really not wanting to get involved with it, it was a tough transaction early on, I think they just kind of ran. And human nature is we work just like a herd of sheep, herd of cows, you name it. One big alpha male takes off stomping in one direction, and the whole herd, they follow in packs. So ultimately what happens is, in your office, if you're a realtor, you've got maybe a top dog salesman or saleswoman, somebody that's just knocking the ball out of the park. They have one bad experience with a short sale, and pretty much the whole world is collapsing around them. They tell 10 people who tell 10 people. And pretty much short sales are banned within that office and nobody wants to deal with them. So what happened is, and why this is a big deal, is because ever since the market started to collapse, people immediately followed the herd. They took off running. And now here we are in 2010. We're 5 years into this mess. And realtors, especially realtors from what I'm seeing, don't have a freaking clue on how to deal with short sales. And that's why I wanted to put this show together today. And to prove my point, what I'm actually going to do is I discovered a blog and I was reading some links on there. And I don't want to tell you guys which blog, only because I'm not here to witch hunt, point fingers, and call people out. That's not the point. I really want to make this a better deal for everybody. But I'm going to read some quotes that I had on a blog for you so you can see exactly what we're dealing with here. And I'm just going to quote some of the realtor comments that were made in regards to short sales. So that's where we're going to go now. Let me pull up this page and we'll just run down the list here as we speak. Okay, so I've got the original article in front of me that sparked the debate. Here's the headline. It says in big, bold, black letters, "Are you involved with short sale fraud? Big question mark. Here are the warning signs." Uh-oh, look out. It's getting serious. And then you pan down about two or three sentences. And first thing is, okay, Before I go any further, let me just state for the record that I am not pulling any punches on these guys. We take fraud very seriously. And then the realtor goes on to define fraud. Okay. So now we know, now we've set everything up, and this pretty much, from the tone that we're getting into on the article, pretty much makes it look like if you're doing short sales, there's going to be some fraud somewhere if you set up your transaction like this. And then he goes on to describe the deal. Here's what he puts. The listing agent either seeks out or is sought out by the seller in a desperate and hard time. They list the home with the agent as a short sell, who then offers the seller a contract on the home from an investor. The contract is way below market value, but the seller signs anyway, not knowing the market value of the home and what it really is. The investor then starts negotiating with the bank, either on behalf of the seller or the agent, to get the sale accepted. Meanwhile, the agent relists the home for sale, but at a much higher price than previously accepted on the contract. And while the home is technically under contract with somebody else, the seller is now the investor who has not yet closed on the home. So, now granted, I have to also lay out the groundwork here, because there could be fraud in a situation like this, the one that we're describing, and there could not be. It's really about how you set things up. I guess it's like anything else. You can have a bad cake or a good cake with the same ingredients. Just depends on how you put it together. You can have a bad transaction or a good transaction with an investor. Now, my standpoint, if you haven't already gotten by where I'm sitting, as a banker and a realtor, I think it is far better to use an investor in a transaction. I think you have to as a realtor, because the realtor solution has been, okay, we don't want to deal with investors, so now we'll become the bank intermediary, and we will take all the paperwork from the seller. We're going to process their bank statements, their Fannie Mae hardship letter, all these things that just, you know, realtors should not be doing. Realtors are transaction specialists. They write up sales contracts. They handle negotiations. They show homes. That's a realtor's job. And if you're getting involved with all these other things, think about how much time that's taking from doing what you're supposed to be doing. Listing homes, working with buyers, working with sellers. That's what you're trained to do. You're not trained to work in this capacity. And even if your office offers some sort of short sale training, you're still not going to be that knowledgeable for the most part. Now, I'm not saying you can't get good at doing short sales. There are some very, very good realtors that do short sales, but these are people that really kind of went rogue. They went out, they did a lot of reading on their own, they got involved with investor clubs, or they just did a school of hard knocks and learned it on their own. But for the most part, what I'm saying is the rudimentary training that you're going to get at your office probably isn't going to be that good. And obviously, again, there's exceptions to every rule, but I've been to quite a few of these trainings, and I can tell you they're not that good. And if you sit in on one or 10, you're not going to be a very good short sale person. So why deal with them? Okay, use the investor. Now, some other points that I need to make. If you're in a transaction where you are dealing with an investor, what would make it fraud? Okay, and I got my notes here, so I am not going to miss a beat. And let me back up one other second here too, because I've got like 15 things running together. So by reading this little intro, the question is, can there be fraud with an investor involved? Well, absolutely there can be. And you take this very same transaction, you do it the right way, and it's a good, clean deal that everybody can be proud of. So I think right off the bat, I don't think this was set up properly, because it makes it look like if you're dealing with an investor and you have a contract from an investor, it's a bad deal and there's fraud. The F word. Fraud. So that's the first thing. The position I've always had in short sales is I think you need to work with an investor. That's my opinion. I think it's the right way to do it. I think it's the best way to do it. I think it's the cleanest way to do the transaction. And think about this. The other solution, which realtors really kind of came to in their own, I guess trial and error over time, realtors collectively, a lot of them just said, hey, we're not dealing with these investors. These guys are shady. They came into town on their big white horses. They undermined us. Now they're trying to do these transactions their way. And you don't want to, you know, show up a realtor in their own, you know, backyard in their area of expertise. Remember, they're the transaction people. So realtors just kind of went their own way and started handling this start to finish. So what's that mean? Now the realtor is gathering hardship letters, taking bank statements, power bills. They're basically putting together the whole entire package that they're submitting to the lender and working to that regard. Well, early on, banks weren't apt to even talk to a realtor without a sales contract. And I know for a fact in Pinellas County and Hillsborough County and the Tampa Bay area where I'm in, it was so bad early on that realtors weren't working with investors. They were gathering up all the documents, but they still couldn't get the banks to bite on the short sale. They couldn't put a transaction together. The banks were pretty much at the standpoint of, you know, we're not going to take a loss on the property until you show me a contract. So what did the realtors start doing in this area? True fact, the realtors started manufacturing, and there were a couple offices that did this, fake sales contracts, you know, John Doe, buyer. And they were doing this to try to get the banks to bite on an offer so that they could basically get the ball in motion. Now, times have changed. Banks have realized that there is a need when, you know, a package comes in that you need to move. There's so many properties on the market that I don't think, for the most part, banks won't work with you if you don't have an offer on a property. But in the old days, and I say, you know, three, four years ago, they wouldn't have anything to do with you. But it's still, if you think about it, from a time perspective, because time is of the essence, it still makes more sense to work with an investor that's qualified, because as soon as you lock that property up, now you do have an offer on the property. And we're going to get to all the other aspects, because I know there's a lot of people blowing whistles on what I just said, but we'll get to that. Okay. So now you understand the transaction. You understand that I am pro-investor. Now I'm going to read some of the comments that the other realtors left in regards to this pretty bold statement that opened up the immediate topic. Now, this is where it really gets funny to me, okay? And these are actual just realtor comments. First one I put was, I do short sales, loads of them. I get approached all the time with one scam after another. I simply tell the investor no and go on about my business. Okay, that's one realtor comment.
You just don't get it, do you? You don't.
Here's another one, just to give you a flavor of what the general consensus is. Isn't it sad in times like these that people are out there willing to take advantage of others when they are at their worst? Ugh, makes me sick.
Houston, we have a problem.
Okay, that's another realtor comment. Let's read a couple more here so you get a feel for what we're dealing with. Here's a classic one, and this one is actually posted by, in this particular blog, there's a scoring system, and this realtor has the highest, one of the highest ratings on the entire blog. There are thousands of realtors in this blog. This is one of the most popular in the entire site. It's like a scoring point system. They put, I report all solicitations I get to the Attorney General for my states, Maryland and Virginia. So now we've got a realtor that's being approached by investors, could be legitimate investors for all we know, and she's reporting them to the Attorney General. Unbelievable.
You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river.
And if you think the ignorance stops there, let me read a couple more. Let's see here. I'm going to sort through this and try to find a couple other good ones that I really liked. This happened to me last summer on an REO. When I learned that the cash buyer was up too, I dropped him like a hot potato. You know, I need my beauty sleep more than it can be bought. Here's another one from a realtor. This one's classic too. Where do all these gutless wonders come from? And why don't they just put their first names on the post without disclosing their true identities? Because basically what was happening is a couple investors posted on the site, and now this realtor is calling them gutless wonders because they didn't, disclose maybe the office they worked in or whatever.
What the heck are you guys doing? Trying to ruin my life and make me look like a friggin' idiot?
She's basically arguing, you need to stand up and be counted for. Stand up and show me who you are. Let's see if there's any others that I could think of here. They're really classic. Oh, here, this one really got me off guard. I've been fighting this for 3 years now. Short sales can be done legally and ethically, even with a third party. But right now we've been looking into this, and we're working with the FBI on several third-party negotiators and realtors who use them. So now here's another realtor that's taken this all the way to the FBI. Wow. So, I mean, as you can see here, it's just absolute mayhem. I mean, realtors are scared out of their minds to deal with investors in general. So let's kind of break this down. What do we really need to be scared of? One of the arguments that I keep seeing is the big fraud, the big F word. And realtors are taking the position that banks are being frauded. There's fraud. They're not being disclosed what the investor's intent is, or that the property is being bought at a lower price and immediately resold at a higher price. That to me sounds like capitalism. And if I put on my banker hat for a minute, hold on a second here, I'm going to put it on. Okay, now I am the banker. I have an expert team of individuals that work with me, and I work in the loss mitigation department. My job is to basically take the non-performing assets, the NPAs, such as homes that are about to be in foreclosure. My job is to make decisions with these properties. My job is to take these NPAs and get them off the books. You know, no bank wants to hold non-performing assets for any one extended period of time. Oh, and by the way, as far as all of you out there that think you can pull the wool over the bank's eyes, not going to happen. I don't care how many MLS comps you submit. I don't care how many appraisals you have. The banks have their own team of people. They're doing their own research. They have software in the banks that run like these AVM profiles. And I can tell you right now, it's well and above beyond anything that the average appraiser can put together. There's absolutely no way you're going to smoke and mirror a bank. The bank knows how much they owe on the property, and they know based on their own books how much of a loss they can afford to take on the home. And they'll come to those conclusions internally. And from the bank's perspective, do you think once they've said, okay, we're going to take X amount, because by the way, you can't force a bank into a price. They agree to the price they're going to take. You know, you're not going to do this, oh, here's the five comps, and I want you to take this $100,000 home. I want you to take it for $45,000. And you think you smoke and mirrored the bank. No. The research was done. If the bank agreed to that price, they agreed to it because that's what they wanted. Because trust me, if the bank doesn't feel they're going to get a fair shake on this, that's when they foreclose. That's when the property goes to auction. So don't think you're outsmarting the bank, because you're not. You're just looking like fools when you say that. And this is where a lot of the realtors are up on their soapbox saying that the banks are getting smoked and being defrauded. It's not happening. Okay. So the banks have software that is far and above beyond what you mere mortals can get your hands on. That's the most important thing that you need to know. And the loss mitigation team is agreeing to the price that they want to sell the home for. To further that point, do I really care as a bank, once I've gotten the price that I agree to, do I really care what the investor is going to do with that property? Do I really care that they're going to turn around and sell it for a profit? No. As long as I get paid off, I'm good. That's where the bank is with this. I don't care if the investor takes the property, builds it into a Taj Mahal, levels the property and turns it into a parking lot or burns it down or makes 10 grand or 15 or 100. Who cares? Trust me, they don't care. The very concept that we're looking at here is the exact same concept that you as a consumer deal with when you go into a Walmart and you buy a gallon of milk or you put gas in your car. When you go up and you're about to make that transaction, you're essentially the bank. You've got the money in your pocket. And you look at the bottom line price and you either decide, yeah, I'm willing to do this, or no, I'm not. Banks are doing the same thing. We all do it. And anytime we go into a retail environment or pretty much engage in general commerce these days, there's a profit being made. And I don't know why we're blaming the investor for having some creativity in a transaction like this and the ability to alleviate a much needed debt. You got to think ultimately where we need to be in this situation. If the seller is in a bona fide short sale situation, there's obviously a problem. And the biggest thing is to save their credit and to give them some debt relief. I mean, those are the two things that they are needing utmost. Okay. I don't know why realtors are consistently getting in the way of making good things happen. Okay. So, regardless of where the contract is with the investor, regardless of where that comes in, and regardless of what you think market value is, market value has not been established because the property has not yet been sold. And even if it is a lowball offer, it's really in an effort to speed along the deal. And remember, it doesn't matter where the offer is because the bank can counter at their leisure or they can take it. Okay. Now, fraud does become a play in a situation if you're working with an investor when the investor is trying to put the cart before the horse. Now, in the situation that we described, where the investor is essentially relisting the property, okay, the key thing and where there could definitely be a fraud situation is if the investor, if he does indeed or she, like I always say he, so just we'll leave it at he. That's how I describe it. If he decides to sell the property or he gets an offer on the property, if he in turn tries to close on the tail end of the transaction, in other words, he's resold the property and he closes on that transaction first and then takes the proceeds from that transaction to pay off the original transaction with the original seller, that is illegal. Basically, you've got the A to B, which is the desperate seller to the investor. And then you've got the B to C, which is the investor to end buyer, whoever that may be. And if you close them simultaneously, A to B, B to C, you're good. But keep in mind, we also have to be able to prove that the funds came from two separate areas. So what we're looking for are wires. Now, an investor can bring in other partners, no problem with that, especially in bigger commercial deals, very common. We have syndication where corporations will come in and each of them will, you know, chip in an amount, and collectively that is the capital that's needed to facilitate the transaction. Now, an investor on a small residential or commercial property can do the same thing. Doesn't matter where this money comes in, as long as it does come in, and it is completely separate from the end sale, the proceeds from the end sale, okay? If those things are done, we don't have fraud in that part of the transaction. Now, the other half of it is complete disclosure. You need to disclose to the seller what's going on. You know, the paperwork needs to be put forth. And obviously, this podcast is being listened to people, you know, all across the country. You all have different states that you operate in, different guidelines. So you need full disclosure, and you need to be operating within the confines of the laws and the jurisdictions that, you know, the property is. And if you handle those two things, and those two things happen simultaneously, it is perfectly legal, ethical, morally, anything you can throw at it, this is the right way to do it. Use an investor, get the job done.